Now we have Sochi Rojas Rocha. She's an intern for our daily news site, here to talk about some recent online stories. I'm Sarah Crespi. First up, we have a story on the effects of maternal smoking on fetal DNA. For decades, mothers have been warned not to smoke while pregnant, and the results of doing so have been quantified. But how smoking impacts things like newborn birth weight, the mechanism at work, has been unclear. So, Sochi, what other problems do these babies have?
So the babies of smokers tend to have problems with their lung function and to have a higher incidence of birth defects. In some cases, adult children of smokers do also struggle with asthma and nicotine addiction.
In the study design here, how did the researchers go about looking into the mechanism?
So what they did was they took the blood samples of 889 newborn infants, and they looked at these infants' DNA to see if there was a particular methyl group on their DNA which had shown to be changed.
And so when you say whether or not there's a methyl group, that means the DNA is the same, it just has something attached to it?
Yes.
Once they looked at these epigenetic marks, these removable marks on the DNA of these babies, did they see any differences between the children of smokers and non-smokers?
Yes, the babies that were born to smokers had changes in 100 gene regions of their DNA as compared to babies born to non-smokers.
And were these gene regions especially interesting or related to some of the effects that we see?
Yes, they're related to fetal development and nicotine addiction.
So you can actually inherit nicotine addiction through this mechanism?
It is possible. They're not entirely certain whether these changes could be permanent or whether they're just part of the natural development of the baby.
So is that the next step then, to see how permanent this is?
Yes, because we have seen that there are connections between the baby being born to a smoker and having long-term health problems like asthma, but we're not entirely certain that it's coming from these epigenetic changes to the DNA.
Next up, we have a story on a turtle going the distance. Marine protected areas make up less than 3% of the vast oceans of the world. Within these regions, human activity is limited in some way, but these reservoirs of wildlife might not be enough to protect some critters. In this case, we're talking about the endangered green sea turtle. So what's up with these turtles, Sochi?
So these turtles aren't exactly staying put where we were hoping they would. They're a migratory species, so in most cases, the scientists were finding that turtles were migrating outside of the boundaries of these marine protected areas to forage.
How far were these turtles going?
The turtle that had traveled the farthest ever recorded actually traveled from the Chagos Archipelago in the Indian Ocean all the way to Somalia, about 4,000 kilometers away.
Wow. Is that what they found for most of the turtles, that they spent a lot of time outside the protected area?
Yes. So the researchers tagged 8 sea turtles, and 1 out of 8 turtles remained within the marine protected area. So the remainder just spent their entire time outside of the boundaries.
What does this mean for the usefulness of marine protected areas in terms of the way that they're protecting migratory species?
Well, the researchers do say that not enough is being done to protect the migratory species because they are spending so much time outside of the marine protected areas. Marine protected areas can help sedentary species, but more needs to be done for the migratory.
And how are these areas, these protected areas, chosen? Can evidence like this help to make the needed changes?
Most decisions that determine how the marine protected areas are formed and where they're formed actually don't have a lot to do with the environmental science. So they're very much based more on territories. So where can the nation afford to put these marine protected areas? Which areas fall within its bounds?
Is this research going to be used to make an argument to make a change to that?
Yes. So researchers are suggesting that for now we need to have larger marine protected areas with smaller ones inside that are going to target exactly where these migratory species will come to land.
Lastly, we have a story on turning birds. Schools of fish and flocks of birds seem to move as a single organism, turning on a dime while maintaining formation. Despite multiple proposed models for how information is conveyed within these tightly knit groups, none have actually ever really fit the data. Can you tell us about some of these older models, Sochi?
Sure. So up until the newest study was published, one of the more accurate models built off the idea that these birds will turn depending on which direction their neighbor turns. So if your neighbor turns left, you turn your left. If your neighbor turns right, you turn right. However, the newest research shows that this study wasn't exactly hitting the mark.
Right. So in this new study, they managed to work out a different model. Is it based on a new kind of data?
Yes. The researchers took video of a flock of starlings flying near a train station. And so they used tracking software to determine exactly where and when each individual bird decided to turn.
And what did they see about these decisions in the video?
So the researchers looked at their videos and they determined that it was more important for an individual bird to determine how sharply its neighbor was turning than in which direction its neighbor was turning. And so they determined from the video that this message to turn was traveling through the flock at about 20 to 40 meters per second at a constant speed.
Going back to the title of this article for a minute, how is a flock of birds like liquid helium?
So it turns out that when you cool helium down to almost absolute zero, it becomes a liquid that has no resistance to flow whatsoever. Each atom is utterly cohesive. That's very much like a flock of starlings in that the speed is always constant. And the researchers determined that their mathematical formula was actually identical to the one used to describe the flow of liquid helium.
All right. What else is on the site this week, Sochi?
Well, this week we have a lot of articles on science policy. So we have a Science Insider describing how NASA has come up with a new set of rules that limit foreign contributions to their planetary missions. And another article on Google X is coming up with a baseline study to determine what exactly it means to be healthy. And those are both from Science Insider, our policy blog.
Thanks, Sochi.
Thanks, Sarah.
Sochi Rojas Rocha is an intern for our online daily news site. I'm Sarah Crespi. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org. This segment is part of the Science Podcast. You can hear the whole show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and the Science website, www.sciencemag.org.